Some days feel like you're winning, and some days feel like you're behind the eight ball, on autopilot, limited, no good options. That's life in the world of seven, natural, cyclical, often predictable, and sometimes monotonous. What if the goal isn't to get a better shot within the system? What if the goal is to rise beyond the system entirely, step into the world of eight, a reality beyond what should be possible? Welcome to Torati Mecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and today we'll be learning Parashat Shmini, the eighth day. There's something quietly radical about the number eight. We live in a world structured around sevens, 7 days of the week, seven notes in the musical scale, seven colors in the spectrum. Seven in Torah represents the natural order, the rhythm of creation itself, rooted in the 6 days of creation and culminating in Shabbat. Seven is the world as it is. And then comes eight. Eight is not just the next number. It's a break in the pattern. It represents stepping beyond the natural cycle, entering a dimension that isn't bound by the limits of time, habit, or even logic. If seven is the world we can predict and measure, eight is the space where something new, something higher, can emerge. A baby is brought into the covenant with spirituality through Brit Milah on the eighth day. Shmini Atzeret keeps us connected beyond the 7 days of Chag. The harp of the future, Chazal tell us, will have eight strings. It will bring us music of the soul beyond the seven notes. Eight signals transcendence, moving from what is into what could be. And that's exactly where Parashat Shmini begins. And it was on the eighth day, Vayihi Bayom HaShmini. After 7 days of preparation, of repetition, the eighth day arrives. This day is different. This is the moment when the Shechina finally descends, when Hashem's presence becomes revealed to the people in a way it never had before. Because the first 7 days were about doing everything right within the system. And the eighth day, that's when something from beyond the system enters in. That raises a powerful question for us. If seven is about structure, discipline, and doing what we're supposed to do, what does it take to reach eight? How do we connect to beyond? Is it automatic? Does it just come after we've done our part? Or does stepping into eight require something deeper, something internal, something transformative? Because Parashat Shmini is not just the story of a successful spiritual climax. It's also the story of what happens when that encounter with the beyond goes wrong. How does one discern between fire that brings the Shechina and fire that doesn't belong? That tension between preparation and transcendence, between human effort and divine fire, is the dance of Parashat Shmini. Parashat Shmini looks at first to be a dance of contrasts. Each section seems to move with its own rhythm, emotional tone, and energy. The joy of the Shechina descending, the shock of Nadav and Avihu's death, the detailed instructions for holiness. At first glance, these movements appear disconnected, but they actually flow from one another. The Torah is teaching us that the path to eight isn't a single linear step. It's a choreography of readiness, alignment, and discernment. Each movement, each section has a purpose in preparing the people, not just externally, but internally, for the Hashem connection beyond the physical. The 7 days of preparation are important. Moshe and Aaron follow every detail, every step, every korban. There is discipline, precision, consistency. That's the world of seven, doing what's required, building the structure. But when the eighth day comes, the connection is not automatic. Something new is demanded. Moshe tells the people, this is the thing Hashem has commanded. Ze hadavar asher tziva Hashem. Do it. Ta'asu. And the glory of Hashem will appear to you. Chazal explained that this wasn't just about more actions. It was about an internal state. The people are called to remove the Yetzer Hara, to align themselves inwardly, not just perform outwardly. And then, only after that inner readiness, the presence of Hashem appeared to all the people. Vayar kvod Hashem el kol ha'am. Vatetze esh milifnei Hashem, fire came forth from before Hashem, vatochal al ha-mizbech et ha'ola v'et ha-chalavim, and it consumed the burnt offering and the fat parts on the altar. Vayar kol ha'am vayaronu. And all the people saw and shouted praise and fell on their face. Vayiplu al pnehem. So eight is not just a technical result of seven. It's what happens when seven is done with the right pnimiyut, internality. Unfortunately, after the celebration, tragedy strikes with Nadav and Avihu. The celebration stops. The rhythm of the story becomes quiet, stunned. It's one of the most painful and mysterious moments in the Torah. Holiness, the Torah seems to be saying, is powerful and beautiful, but it's also demanding and dangerous when approached improperly. The Mishkan is not just inspiring, it's serious. Nadav and Avihu also reached for eight. They brought an Esh Zarah, a fire of their own, trying to access that same transcendence, but it wasn't commanded and not aligned with Hashem's will, and the result is devastating. Which means you can't skip seven and jump to eight, and even doing seven perfectly doesn't guarantee eight. It requires something else, humility, and a willingness to receive, not just to initiate. It's the difference between building a perfect structure and becoming the structure. Eight is a gift that arrives not when we build, but only when we become a vessel ready to hold it. In a powerful act of inner strength, we are told, Vayidom Aharon. Aaron was silent. The Ramban and later the Gra teach that Aaron did cry, but Vayidom tells us that even in his personal moment of loss, he did not question God's ways. After the national shock and the mourning, Moshe turns back to us and teaches that like all dances, there are boundaries and guidelines to achieve a movement of purity in mind and body. In all our actions, we must discern between the holy and the mundane, levdil ben hakodesh uben hachol, between what is pure and what is impure, ben hatameh uben hatahor. This rhythmic sequence teaches that holiness requires active God-aligned choices. Passion alone is not enough. Closeness without boundaries can be fatal. The Mishkan has revealed that sacred energy must be channeled carefully. So this movement takes us from the intense spiritual experience to mindful daily practice. Every choice becomes an arena for cultivating awareness and spiritual alignment. We must always be dancing the dance of discernment. At the very beginning of creation, the first commandment given to humans was about food. From all the trees of the garden you may eat, from the tree of knowledge you may not eat. Rabbi Eli Monk explains that the Mishkan is a parallel to creation itself, a new beginning. Just as Hashem created a world for humanity, Bnei Yisrael created a space for Hashem. In these moments of creation, the Torah returns to the same starting points, eating and physical intimacy. These are among the most primal human activities, shared with many other forms of life. Without intimacy, there's no continuation of a species. Without food, even the individual cannot survive. For this reason, different cultures have taken radically different approaches to physicality. Some embrace a pleasure-centered model, where physical experiences are pursued and celebrated. Others adopt an aesthetic approach, withdrawing from physical life and minimizing bodily needs. The first emphasizes only the body, the second only the soul. Judaism, by contrast, understands that the human being is a fusion of both. We are body and soul together. The goal, therefore, is neither indulgence nor withdrawal, but transformation. We are commanded to elevate these most basic aspects of life, not in dramatic moments of fire from heaven, but in the quiet, repeated choices of daily life. With the building of the Mishkan, a new chapter emerges for the Jewish people. Not an idyllic Eden existence yet, but as Rabbi Sacks beautifully describes, a new dignity for an old creation, a new start to creating a spiritual reality in our physical world. The Torah moves from the dramatic service of the sanctuary to the laws of kosher food in a carefully composed movement in the symphony of holiness. Here, the Torah takes us from awe and celebration in the sanctuary, in our hearts, to conscious everyday holiness in eating and nurturing ourselves, our soul. Each step builds on the one before. Holiness isn't something that stays in the Mishkan. It flows into how we live, how we choose, how we act. The order itself is a lesson. Every movement matters, and each leads us further along the dance of discernment. From this perspective emerge the kashrus laws in Parshat Shmini and the laws of family purity in Parshat Tazria and Metzora, two central expressions of Kedusha and Tahara, a life in which even the most physical experiences become pathways to holiness and purity. When we look at eating and kashrut, a life of seven is that we eat. A life of eight is how we eat. Kashrut takes this most basic human act and turns it into a space where we choose whether to live in seven or step into eight, to eat with awareness, with boundaries, with the ability to discern what belongs and what doesn't. As a child, the expression "you are what you eat" terrified me. What science has learned over the years is that "you are what you eat" isn't just physical. Sure, the food we eat affects our cholesterol, muscle mass, and brain structure, but it also changes our happiness index and mental health all around. If we dig deeper, one of the basis of the concept of kosher is soul food. That which we bring into our body affects our soul. Eating affects our spiritual reality too. The soul is like an antenna that picks up waves of spiritual energy, and non-kosher food has a negative effect on a Jewish soul. Everything which we consume not only becomes part of us physically, but also spiritually. The food or drink we consume affects us on a spiritual plane, on a soul level, influencing our character and affecting our natural tendencies. Eating kosher leads a person to holiness. I find it fascinating that we aren't told the specific names of animals, except a few examples, but rather signs to recognize which animals are kosher to eat. I think it's so that we're actively engaged with choosing what we eat and don't take eating animals for granted. So first of all, the animals that are kosher all are domesticated and non-predatory. At their core, the traits of kosher animals reflect qualities we might aspire to: peacefulness, compassion, and humility, for example. Hashem created these animals with signs that are not arbitrary, but rather teach deep lessons of the spiritual qualities of the animal and how that quality affects the person who ingests it as food. On land, an animal's acceptability is determined by two qualities, if it chews its cud and if it has split hooves. To chew the cud is to regurgitate, to eat and re-eat, to digest and redigest. As much as it's a physical process, chewing the cud is a lesson in constant review. It teaches us to continually reevaluate our motivations and our actions, to be thinking and aware humans. When we chew things over, pun intended, we carefully weigh up our decisions and we don't act in haste, but with thought and foresight. We learn that repeated digestion of thoughts and actions brings an ongoing self-awareness. Chewing cud means to use our past experiences again and again, to learn from them, to use our past as nourishment and inspiration for the future. The hoof is the point of contact separating between the animal and the ground, the physical world. This reflects our engagement with everyday practical matters where we're also taught to retain an awareness that there is something beyond the physical. The trick is to maintain a balance, to walk in this material world while acknowledging we have a higher spiritual dimension. Keeping kosher instills self-discipline and enables us to elevate our spiritual side. There are animals with full hooves, but kosher animals must have split ones. This reminds us that we're not put into this world with a decided specific destiny. We do not have just one road to follow. Rather, we're here to make our own decisions. We're not products of society or of history. We take charge and choose for ourselves. You should never feel stuck or that you have only one predestined option. We were all given free will. Split hooves symbolizes moral discernment, the ability to choose a path and act consciously, to choose wisely. So put these signs together, we must try to stay focused from head to foot, to reflect on the past, and to choose consciously for the future. Why didn't the Torah give just one identifying characteristic? A single trait can be misleading. Something can look good on the outside but lack inner depth, or it can have inner qualities but fail to express them properly in action. Holiness requires integration. The inside and the outside must align. Chewing cud represents inner processing and intentional spirituality, while the split hoof represents external behavior. The Torah therefore requires both signs to remind us that a holy life requires inner awareness and outer action. Thinking without action is incomplete. Action without reflection can be dangerous. Holiness emerges only when the inner world and the outer worlds are aligned. How about the laws that govern the kashrut of fish? Fish must have fins and scales. As the armor that protects the body of the fish, scales represent the quality of integrity, which protects us from the very many pitfalls that life presents. A business owner of integrity will not deceive their customers in spite of the financial profits involved. A person of integrity will not lie to a friend despite the short-term gain from doing so. They will not cheat on their spouse, even in the face of tremendous temptation. Integrity means that one has absolute standards of right and wrong and is committed to a morality that transcends moods and desires. Integrity preserves our souls from temptation. In our practical understanding of this mystical reality, when we eat kosher fish, we symbolically imbue ourselves with integrity, allowing it to guide our own moral compass and fortify our character against ethical lapses. Fins, the wing-like organs that propel fish forward, represent ambition. For us to accomplish our purpose on this earth, we must cultivate the drive to move, to grow, to continually strive for a higher purpose. This drive is what fuels human potential, allowing us to transform our world. In buying kosher fish, we can look only for scales, because every fish that has scales also has fins. On the other hand, some fish have fins but have no scales, and those are not kosher. Fins with no scales. In other words, ambition but with no integrity. What happens when a person has ambition with no integrity? Arrogance, ego, selfishness. So many so-called heroes, business and political leaders are like non-kosher fish, fins without scales, rushing forward in the world, willfully blind to the consequences of their attitude and behavior. A person can have ambition, but integrity doesn't automatically follow. Interestingly, educators and psychologists find that when we guide a person to living a decent and moral life, they also develop ambition to do good. If we focus on integrity, it's followed by a natural desire to make the world a better place. Jewish parents are notorious for helping their children develop fins, ambition, an inquisitive mind. We want them to develop themselves, be upwardly mobile, achieve more than previous generations. This might result in confident doers, but such education doesn't guarantee their moral standing. You can have ambition, but with no integrity. To truly raise Jewish children is to teach integrity, guiding them to living a decent and moral life. When we focus on establishing their scales of integrity, so to speak, living a life of Torah and mitzvos, we ensure that they will surely also develop fins, the ambition to achieve and do good. Such a fish Such a child will surely go forth with learning and decency and the determination to make the world a more beautiful place. As with the child, so it is with adults. Same thought process, we can perhaps understand the signs of a kosher chagav, locust. A kosher locust must have 4 walking legs, 2 jumping legs, and 4 wings that cover most of its body. The Torah doesn't describe the locust as merely having jumping legs, but uses the word lenater, implying a powerful spring-like propulsion. There are moments in life that call not for incremental steps, but for courageous leaps. Yet that is not enough. Rashi describes these leaping legs as positioned near the head. It's a subtle but powerful image. Our greatest leaps must be guided by clarity and conscious thought. The wings that cover the body evoke a sense that our actions must be enveloped, held within something larger than the physical impulse itself. Movement and ambition are necessary, but they must be framed by values, awareness, and a sense of higher purpose. Without that covering, we risk becoming scattered and unanchored. Taken together, the kosher locus suggests a 3-fold balance: the ability to surge forward with strength, the discipline to direct that movement with the mind, and the wisdom to ensure it's all contained within a framework that elevates it. And even these signs are not enough on their own. Shulchan Aruch clearly states that locusts are only eaten with a Masorah, a living tradition identifying them as kosher. Sometimes, clarity doesn't come from signs alone, but from what is faithfully received and transmitted. Not everything can be determined through personal analysis. Just as our movement must be guided, so too our understanding. Some things require the direction of Masorah. In eating only kosher food, we habituate ourselves to become aware of where I come from and to become the type of person who makes discriminating choices. We want to accomplish, but within parameters. This sets a standard of wise choices of behavior for all areas of life. Since we always need to eat, we are constantly reminded to be mindful. This movement sequence teaches that holiness without discernment can be dangerous, whether this is an intense spiritual experience or repetitive daily practice. The Mishkan stood at the center of the camp, but the Torah's ultimate vision was a people who live with awareness and integrity everywhere. The 8th day, Shmini, reminds us we are stepping beyond the natural cycle to live a life of spirituality. Life is full of rhythm changes, celebration, tragedy, restraint, and holiness. Every day asks us to be mindful and choose wisely. And that ongoing conscious practice, balancing thought and action, integrity and ambition, reflection and choice, is the dance of discernment.